You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 14 August, we got UK GDP year-on-year expected later this morning, 1% what the market is expecting. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kenyana, Scope Prime, Grindrod and Capitec updates, market liked both. We've also got Lee Nike from TransUnion Africa, vehicle sales, but they've got a new report out on vehicle sales, and certainly it's been a good year so far. Kirsten Smith from Citadel, the rise of family offices and what purpose do they serve? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, responses to US tariff increases may trigger closer tax scrutiny. Graphene Economics say even Mauritius is looking into intergroup transactions more closely. Business Day, Reserve Bank Governor sees 3% inflation target as key to cutting SA's risk premium, says fiscal policy must complement monetary move to unlock circle of lower rates and stronger growth. Morning markets, US was green, new all-time highs, S&P up 0.3% and NASDAQ up 0.04%. That's the 17th all-time high for S&P this year. East is mixed, Sydney up 0.2%, Tokyo down 1.25%, Hong Kong down 0.1%, and Tencent up another 1.6% after strong Tencent music results yesterday. Commodities mixed, gold futures 3,406, Brent is red at 65.91, Platinum is red, 1,344. Palladium green, 1,148. Rand, 1,752. Bitcoin, 123,600. And top 40 opening call, green, 225 points, or a quarter of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Kenyon Yana from Scope Prime. Okay, I always appreciate the early morning time. Results season kicking off a bit locally. We're getting some updates coming through. Grindrod, not a bad update. A lot of moving parts. And I think a lot of folks, there was all the violence, of course, post-election violence in Mozambique last year. That seemed to have spooked the market. This looks like a fairly decent update in a stock that perhaps is offering some value, or maybe you think otherwise. Your thoughts on Grindrod and the update?
No, I think it's quite fully priced, and it's not fully priced because of the fact that I think the market has loved it that much. I just think it's gone through such a torrid time, I think, as you said, with the Mozambican problem as well as the earnings misses in the past. But I think this one came in line with a lot of expectation, in line with how they're saying that shipping has kind of slowed down. But what was a good once-off payment? There was a good once-off payment of most of $1 billion that really did bolster the earnings of Grindrod more than anything else. But funny enough, I was looking at the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund yesterday, and they started to nibble a bit in global freight in AP Moller Maersk, ADNOC Logistics and Navios Maritime Partners. So I think right now they're looking at the results of some of the competitors globally. The shipping books are looking quite good.
Yeah, we had also a Dotter out of Maersk earlier in the week. I'd forgotten about that. They also were saying nice things about their future prospects. Let's switch to Capitec, the stock that is it's either eye-wateringly expensive or just terrifyingly expensive. I mean, current PE is 31, forward is 26. But another trading update from them that says they are still growing sort of working into their valuation. The stock's astounding.
It is truly astounding, and it reflects a stellar performance across all the business units. I mean, if you look at it during the current period, they increased loans, and you know the annualized credit loss ratio also remains stable, and the net investment portfolio also had a positive net interest income. You're seeing them getting new customers in at the higher LSMs. And as well as when you look at the rest of the financial services group, I mean, you look at the life insurance business, which now manages about 3.3 million active funeral and life cover policies and over 15 million lives insured. So, I mean, it's a truly diversified financial services firm. And essentially, they're finding ways to cross-sell to the distribution that they have within the group.
So the challenge with this stock, and I'm looking at price to book, which is a, you know, we look at the other big banks, they all price to books around, well, Absa Nedbank or sub one, Nedbank and Absa sub one, First Rand close to two, Standard Bank in the middle. This is an 8.4 price to book. It's been there back in 2010. It's been there a few other times. I mean, does one hold it or does one buy it, or does one just look at it and wish we had bought it?
I think you can look at it and wish you had bought it. If you hold some, keep on holding it. It's not bad to keep on holding. I mean, you look at the year, your 1 year change. I mean, you're up almost 35%. I mean, if it keeps on churning out returns for you, keep it in your portfolio. But for me at the moment, it's just too fully priced for you to even consider adding it right now.
Yeah, look, here's my fun fact, which will make everyone cry, myself included. On Liberation Day, 9th of April, that stock dropped to 2,500. It's now trading at just under 3,700. A quick last question, Keir. We've got markets the world over at all-time highs, including our own. As a long-term investor, I love it. Does it make you slightly nervous, or are you just wallowing in the fact that all-time highs mean we're all a little richer?
I think my stock pick is just buy the market at the moment. don't look anywhere else. I mean, our local market really was buoyed by the results of Tencent, which were incredible, really. And I think that is really what really drove our market yesterday. Globally, I think that the rumors that there might be a Fed rate cut, the Fed fund rate cut, has really also still buoyed markets. And also the US-China truce, which I think these enemies are truly allies, because they find a way to each other every single time they get each other to the brink. So continue buying the market. That would be my stock pick.
Yeah, I take your point. Absolutely. And if we get what, September's the meeting, I think it's the 17th. If that gets a cut, this market is even stronger. We'll leave it there. Kenyon Yon at Scope Prime. Always appreciate the early morning time. Our question goes back to Capitec. The stock's expensive, but do you hold it? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Lee Naik, as CEO at TransUnion Africa. Lee, appreciate the early morning time. Q1 2025 Mobility Insights Report. This is a new report from TransUnion Africa. Give us a quick thought on the process and methodology.
Thanks, Simon. Well, we've been around for a long time, some 125 years in South Africa, and we've been tracking the vehicle pricing index for quite a while. In fact, we want to understand what is going on with vehicle sales in South Africa, and predominantly the relationship between new cars and used cars. And as you've heard just a few days ago from Mikhail Mabasa from NAMSA, we had a growth of 15.6% vehicle sales increase in July, right? So clearly something's happening. And what we wanted to understand with a new version of this almost 20-year-old report, now we call it the Mobility Insights Report, is there's a lot going on with generations and how people behave. And we want to get stuck into understanding patterns so that the industry can respond in good time.
I get your point, and it is for that response. And the key thing, the number that jumped out at me, passenger sales, this is Q1, up 20-odd%, 102,000. It's the highest quarterly figure in more than 9 years. I mean, we all looked at that 50,000 number for July and we're excited about that. But actually, the industry's been growing and sales have been increasing.
Absolutely. It's been about 6 quarters now. So something is in the water, and it's not just the announcement of the latest interest rate decrease that kicks in momentarily. It's been a period of behaviors, I believe, Simon, that we need to unpack somewhat slightly. If you go back some 6 quarters going into the second half of last year, we heard about the two-pot system, people being able to access retirement savings. We then saw the decrease of interest rates. And what we've seen, Simon, over the last 6 quarters, call it 5 quarters until the end of quarter one, is we've seen an improvement in household income. That means that we have a certain level of debt to banks and other lenders, and that percent has decreased. In fact, that number's gone down from around 62.4 to around 62. 2%. Not a big number in terms of decrease, but what it tells us is that people have access to more money at a household level. And two things happen. One, people do start to pay down their debts because we've now been in a culture and a habit of becoming better educated about the importance of credit. Mm-hmm. And secondly, as the market has changed, and the entry of Chinese vehicles have come in for around the same time as the report has shown a massive improvement. We know that the Chinese vehicles have put a proposition on the table that makes this new cohort of consumers, specifically Generation Y and Z, really want to get into vehicles regardless of how they look and how they drive.
And that's it. And the other key thing which stands out, I think we all know this, because if you stop at a robot, certainly in Johannesburg, I imagine the other cities as well, we're seeing a lot of Chinese vehicles coming in. One of the data points is Suzuki is now the second largest vehicle after behind a Toyota, overtaking Volkswagen. It is a lot of the new sort of age brands, in a sense.
Well, absolutely. But I think the key point to point out is that post the pandemic, and if you think back to you and myself for a second, I would like to firmly state as a hypothesis that Simon's priorities changed in the period of the pandemic. What is important to Simon pre-pandemic? And I'd like to believe that Simon post-pandemic is less materialistic. I hope so. And what you think about buying things, having assets, it's really powerful as to what's changed. So the consumer now realizes that we got to prioritize things that are important. Now, in an economy where unemployment is so high, this cohort of youngsters, Simon, much younger than you and I, what they're starting to do is they're starting to signal to us that they are optimistic about South Africa's future. They believe that we can get from the 1.5% GDP to the 3% and more by 2030. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to act in a different way. So they aren't as brand loyal. There's no brand affinity. If you can put them into a vehicle with unlimited kilometer warranty on the engine, you give them a tank of free fuel for the year, they're going to go in. So brand affinity has changed. And there's a subtle optimism in this youth. Now, back in the report you have in front of you, it clearly states that the biggest growth contributor to vehicle asset finance came from these two cohorts of our consumer population. The Gen Xers like you and I, the baby boomers, they've been a lot more conservative. So I think that people want to get active. People want to take control back as consumers. And we've done lots of studies around the correlation between transport poverty and financial poverty. And we believe that the entry of the Asian vehicles is a signal that we could do better. We can drive better inclusion of people participating in the economy. And by driving that, Simon, we get SMMEs up and running. And as you and I both know, they're the ones that create jobs in our economy.
And that's a great point, because, I mean, the Chinese cars are great cars. They're great prices. They're not the traditional sort of luxury German sedan. And I like your point around not showing off anymore. And maybe, because the next point was, we're keeping our cars longer, 6 to 8 years. Previously, used to be closer to 5. And that directly plays into your, we're not trying to impress the neighbors anymore so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I use myself as an example. I had a certain pattern of buying cars prior to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Always bought a car every 3 years. I had this apprehension that my car would break on, you know, one day after 3 years. Post-pandemic, I have not changed my car. Because I've realized that actually these cars are meant to last. And if it does break, what do I do about it? So there's definitely something around how people behave. Now, the point about priorities changing and the that moment was in the pandemic. We saw in the pandemic, and we study this every single quarter, we found that in the pandemic, people were selling their second car and they're moving from a single sedan to a mid-size SUV. They really want the big SUV. They would do a crossover and they would realize that actually I could drop the wife off or the husband off on my way to work. So inevitably, the cycle has changed. Now, we may see a new pattern with the entry of much, much cheaper vehicles coming into the market, Simon. But it's important to know that our behaviors has changed. The second point that you don't have in front of you is that only 39% of insured vehicles on the road today are actually financed.
Yeah.
A second correlating data point that people are holding on to vehicles longer. And for us as a motor vehicle industry that wants to sell a car to a Simon or a Lee, we're going to change how we position the car. It's going to talk the language and the tone of what Simon wants and Lee wants in where we are today, because we aren't infatuated with a new model, a new color, new stripes on the car. So we're now starting to ask the question, what is it we want from our banks, our lenders, from the car manufacturer? And it's more than just price. It's about value. It's about doing good for the community. Mm. We're actually now taking control back as consumers, Simon, and we're asking a lot more from the industry.
Absolutely. And it ties in with the other point, and we're out of time, so we won't dig into it, but the younger buyers are using social media, and that isn't a surprise, but absolutely there is that shift. We'll leave it there. Lee Naik, CEO, TransUnion African, appreciate the early morning. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kirsten Smith, advisory partner at Citadel. Kirsten, we're going to talk family offices. We've chatted a few times on this show before, but before I get into it, what is a family office? I mean, this is really managing finances for very high net worth individuals, I think.
Correct. So you really are looking at ultra high net worth kind of families who are looking at generational type wealth as opposed to just servicing themselves. There's a strong legacy component that needs to be taken into account.
And this, I imagine, part of it comes in, and we know the story that, you know, the first generation makes the money, the second generation kind of spends it, and there's nothing left for the third. This is part of kind of solving that problem. And I'm not being disparaging to people who've made the money, but this is what the solution really is.
No, absolutely. And I think, like you said, it often is that third generation where the money dissipates at that point. And often I think there's been the expectation through where the younger generations have always seen the wealth, and it's almost kind of just expected and tends to evolve. Mm. And then they don't tend to actually put in the work or the understanding and the necessary drive to take that wealth forward.
Do we have a sense of how many there are family offices there are in South Africa and globally?
I think South Africa is now home to about 50 family offices. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the latest research. And then worldwide, we're hitting about 10,000 now. So it's not a lot, but it is absolutely a growing area.
It's growing, I suppose, in part because of that wealth creation. But it's also, I imagine, a lot of it is about preserving wealth, but there's nuances to it. In a note, like you talked around best practices and the like, and it's understanding what those are. What would be some of those best practices?
Well, I think a massive additional driver behind all of that is just the massive increase that we're seeing in terms of compliance and having to have really, really good tax structures in place. I mean, in the past, you could just go and hide your money in Switzerland and everything was going to be good. Now, all your tax jurisdictions talk to each other. Your tax structuring has become a whole lot more complex. So with the complex, really rises the need for solid advice and expertise and experience in helping you manage that wealth and take it forward.
And a lot of it, I imagine, is also sort of preparing the next generation to, I mean, maybe a bit around the money, absolutely, but also maybe the ethoses of the family. And here I'm thinking, you know, particularly maybe charitable work or positions within a company. It might even be board seats.
No, and I think that's also become more and more of a phase, like a buzz kind of word, like putting some kind of meaning behind your money. So it's more than about the wealth. It's about understanding what's our why behind the money? Where did the money come from? So it's about bringing your kids into the fold. For me, that's a really, really important part of it. And it's difficult for a lot of families to talk about money. And they come from an historical kind of family where no one spoke about money. It was you just kind of carry on. And whereas I try and teach the families that I work with and really impart to them that it's so important to start talking to your kids about money from when they're really, really young. Let them understand how hard it is to earn that money. Every cent that has come through has been made. And then as that wealth builds up, it's actually understanding as a family, what are our family values? How do we want this money to be spent, invested, to create good down the line? And I think once you've got intent, it makes every decision so much easier to make.
Yeah, and younger is always better, and not just for high net worth individuals. Talk around money. It's one of those far too often the taboos. It should be chatted around at the family table. Otherwise, one day you get the money and it's kind of gone.
Absolutely.
And you'd lack those skills. And this is it. This is more, I mean, part of it is around preserving the money, but there's a lot more to it, a family office, than just that preserving. You mentioned compliance, you mentioned tax. It's being strategic and clever with it. It's making sure that everyone actually understands what's happening and how it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, now as part of family offices, we even do things like family constitutions. So whereas with business, you've got things like a vision and a mission statement, we now actually sit down with our families and do the same with them and say, listen, what is it? What is the legacy that your family wants to leave behind? And when we say legacy, I always try and explain legacy as a thing. So legacy is everything you do. It's not just this thing you leave behind. It's every, like as Oprah says, it's every life you touch along the way. It's everything you do, everything you say, and your money should be treated in the same way. But to do that, you need to have a really careful plan in place. You need to have that family constitution, which defines that why, which defines that how you want to do things, what you want to leave behind, and the like. And once you've clearly articulated that, it then makes the implementation and the decision making so much easier.
Absolutely. And I imagine we mentioned numbers earlier. There certainly is some good growth happening. 50 in South Africa seemed like a large number. When I think about it, it makes sense, because I thought, you know, maybe some of the, particularly the younger generations, just hand me the money, I'll look after it. But chatting with you, looking at the data, this is a something which is being embraced by families, both the creator of the wealth and ultimately the next generations.
And I think it's amazing. And I think particularly here in South Africa, where there is, I mean, we know that there is a massive wealth, there is a massive wealth divide, and there's so much need here. And I think you actually even more and more realize that with success comes responsibility. And you know, you need to look after very much what you have and give back responsibly, and with a why and a how behind it as well.
Yeah, why and a how, and that's the critical part. We leave it there. Kirsten Smit, advisory partner, Citadel, appreciate the time. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with Ntombele Bopela from F&B Wealth and Investments. The Sasol update, stocks on a PE of under 3. It's cheap, but is there value? She said, yeah, she thought maybe there was. We asked you, 40% said, just over 40% said yes, looking great. Just under 40% said you'd moved on from Sasol. The rest said, no, still a horror. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Trade routes going through Europe.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.